President Bush completed the circle of his closest military and foreign policy advisers by naming Richard Myers as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. All of Mr. Bush's cabinet secretaries have been confirmed by the Senate and are settling into their new jobs, but more than 200 sub-cabinet-level political appointees still await Senate consideration. NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne has been watching as the cabinet has taken form. He joins us to review how the key players in the administration are finding their places in the Bush team. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
In most administrations, there are only a few high-profile cabinet members. You have the Defense Secretary, Secretary of State, Treasury, Attorney General. Any surprises here so far?
Yes, there have indeed been surprises in terms of how things are shaking out after the first 7 months or so. This cabinet's been talked about for its diversity, and it certainly is that. But it's also diverse in that it's got a mix of corporate types and former governors and some longtime government types, Washington types.
Well, speaking of the corporate types, we're starting to hear more from Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. He's having this financial crisis in Argentina to deal with. Has he met some of the expectations?
He came in being praised for his corporate ability and for his longtime friendship with Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan and for his knowledge of world markets. He's a very candid fellow, something that was very charming as a CEO. He says bluntly what's on his mind. And that's not something that's always really well received in this town. An example, at one point he questioned the ability of a big tax cut to be a big economic stimulus, which contradicted one of the administration's major selling points on that tax issue. But he was one of those guys who had people scratching their heads a bit, and that wasn't supposed to be the case with Paul O'Neill.
The cabinet member that has probably the greatest star power, at least going into this, is Colin Powell. But he's been eclipsed in many ways by Rumsfeld, also by National Security Advisor Condi Rice. What's he doing to establish himself in this cabinet, and how much of a role is he playing in establishing foreign policy?
He has been on the road a lot. He's made some very important trips, meeting key players, which is what you would expect of a Secretary of State. We're told he's in constant contact with all of the players in the Middle East, trying to figure out some way to advance the situation there. But it's true that he has been overshadowed in some key areas. He has not been the one in the lead going to Russia to discuss the ABM treaty and the Bush administration's plans for withdrawing from that at some point. He's not been talking a great deal about the missile defense shield, which is something that he has had somewhat lukewarm support for. He's not been as visible in some of these very important priorities for the administration, and that has been an interesting thing to watch.
Christine Todd Whitman, another high-profile person going into this at the Environmental Protection Agency, is she, like Powell, being overshadowed?
Well, she's not one who's complaining about not getting much attention. Mm-hmm. Some of the others may be. She has been wrestling with the U.S. decision to walk away from the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty, the decision to roll back regulations on CO2 emissions that Mr. Bush supported back when he was a candidate. Then there's been the whole controversy over the drilling up in Alaska in the protected areas. So she's under the microscope and has been taking a lot of heat, and a lot of people are watching her very closely to see how that all shakes out.
In President Bush's new energy policy, what kind of role is Spencer Abraham at the Energy Department making in this? Does he have a lot of input in that?
He has input, though Vice President Cheney chaired the Energy Task Force on that. But Abraham was involved. But Abraham, and I should say this is true of all of these cabinet officers, they do spend a lot of time out in the country speaking to small groups, sometimes to Republican groups, sometimes they're at fundraisers, sometimes they're doing things that aren't getting a lot of national attention, but they're playing the role of cheerleader on any of these given topics. And that's certainly been the case with Spencer Abraham. We've also seen him on television a lot, selling the energy policy and talking about the need to develop some sort of a comprehensive energy policy.
President Bush wants to be known as the education president. We keep hearing about that, but we haven't seen much of Rod Page, the education secretary, and I even heard rumors that he was going to quit. What's happening?
Rod Paige insists he's not going to quit. He says that's not how he handles things. But he has not been the front man on education policy in this administration. He insists he's comfortable with the role he plays, and he too has been visiting a lot of classrooms. He's been to, I think, 25 or so states since he was sworn in, and he too is playing that role of cheerleader for the administration policy, even though it appears he wasn't intimately involved in the formulation of that policy.
I have to ask you about the lone Democrat in this cabinet, U.S. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta. Haven't heard that name much in the media.
We can put him on that list of invisibles or somewhat invisibles. But at transportation, again, it's not one of the top line cabinet posts. Norman Mineta has been very quiet so far.
Don Gagne, NPR's White House correspondent, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. My pleasure.